Hi, folks. Welcome. How are you doing? This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast, Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 97. Today, I'm going to get to a couple of the questions that I've had, one from last week's podcast, and one from way back quite a bit more. And another topic that I want to kind of revisit also a little bit today. So this is a little hodgepodge of a couple topics that people have been asking about. Cold winter, isn't it? Oof. So easy to get the podcast done in the morning before it warms up so I can let the dogs get out on the cold ground. So the topic I'm going to start with is one that maybe I'm starting with this because I experience this all the time with dogs that I get in. But I want to talk about, for all of you that are getting puppies or have puppies or remember your dog when it was a puppy, I want to talk about problems that we create inadvertently, unintentionally, with our little guys when they're just precious and cute, you know, and they weigh 15 pounds or 12 pounds and, oh, they're adorable. And so we enjoy it and let them be puppies and we do all these things. And then later on, you know, have behaviors that we have to deal with that we don't know where they came from or how to fix them. So the easiest thing is pretty much don't start these problems. Don't let these problems, you know, initiate to begin with. But I don't believe a lot of people think of it that way or put two and two together, you know, all the stuff they're doing when they're just little cute things. And then what happens a little bit down the line when these puppies start to exhibit this behavior and it's just, you know, they don't know what to do about it. And then you start getting online, how do I keep my dog from doing this or whatever it is? So I would just want to talk about some problems. You know, I probably, if I thought about it, I could have a list of, a very extensive list. But I want to talk about the primary things that I see in dogs that I get in. Because again, I'm a professional dog trainer. I train dogs all day, every day. And so I get them generally around 6, 7, 8 months, generally. So that's, you know, and so I have a kind of raw material to start formal training, all the formal stuff. And by the way, which is all my video series that I've talked about for a year now, is we are finalizing this thing and it's going to show all the training stuff for the formal training that you start around 6 or 7 months. So I'm real excited to get that out. We've worked really hard on that and a lot of dogs should work a lot of dogs to try and demonstrate the different ways that you go about different dogs. So look forward to that. I'm excited to get that out. So when you start that kind of stuff, when you get them at 8 weeks, all the way up to the kind of formal training. And formal training really is formal training. Formal training means, just so everybody understands, it's like, all right, it's fairly absolute. That is, now I'm going to teach you to heel and sit on the leash. You may already be good on the leash and walk on it, but now we're going to do heel and sit, and you need to sit the first time without me helping you along or doing the work for you. You need to be at my side when I say heel, forwards, backwards, turn in circles, and it's absolute. And even if there are distractions somewhere, you still have to do that. That's what I'm talking about. And then you have to hold the bumper and you have to do your obedience holding the bumper. You can get a dog, acquaint a little dog with that, but you cannot enforce, you know, the absolute nature of it, and shouldn't either on little dogs. So I'm talking about before you start more of the absolute, this is how it's going to be, how you train these dogs is very important. It's important, one, for you, just for you selfishly. If you prevent dogs from becoming noisy, dogs from jumping on you, dogs from running away, dogs from roughhousing with other dogs, which no, is not a good thing. I must be the only person in the world who doesn't think that's a good thing, but I really don't think it's a good thing with good reason. So if to prevent all of that kind of stuff, because it leads to worse behavior later on. Okay. Jumping, barking, running away, resisting, mauling other dogs, you know, when they're little and they can't do too much damage other than shred ears and lips and stuff. Sometimes it can be problematic. And so if you don't let these things begin, if you don't let that thought and behavior and neural paths form in the brain, then it doesn't. And so then you don't have those problems later on. And it really is that simple. So I just want to isolate a few of those and talk about those. And the first one, this is highly unpopular. This is highly unpopular with everybody. And I understand that. But I'll say everything I tell you that in my opinion, it's all my opinion, is what I've done with every dog almost I've ever had. Maybe when I was a little kid, I wasn't quite so this way, but it's so intuitively obvious to me. And then after training dogs that have been raised that way and not raised that way, it's just blatantly obvious that there's some things that that people, if they just did them, okay, would be very helpful to you and to your dog. And I'm going to start with the unpopular one, and I can just see the faces, okay? Quit picking these puppies up. And there's the face, right? What do you mean don't pick a puppy up? That's just not right. Right? Yeah, sometimes you have to pick them up. You have to pick them up to put them in the vehicle, in the crate. You have to pick them up to get them up on the vet's table so they can get examined. You know, you have to pick them up to put them somewhere that you need them to be or over the fence. Sure, you have to do that. But you know what everyone does, right? Oh, there's a puppy. And the first thing the puppy does, they do is pick up the puppy. You notice the mother dog doesn't ever pick up the puppy, right? Unless it's an emergency situation and we have to get them out of the wherever they are. They don't do that. Of course, they don't have arms. But picking up in the dog world is not a thing. It's not a thing that happens in the world, but it is in ours, you know, and we pick up our children. Absolutely. I picked up my kids a billion times. I don't pick up my puppies ever, because if I want to go smooch on them and snuggle up and all that stuff, which we all do, I'll go down to them, four on the floor, and I will smooch and love on them and all the stuff that's fun. And then I get up and step away and then we're done. And I don't let other people, nobody in my family picks up puppies anyway, unless you need to. You get down on the ground and love on them or whatever it is. But when you, and I know the little kids, right? Oh, the little kids pick them up and then this, and they have puppy breath when they're little and you snuggle them into your neck. It's so nice, isn't it? And then you keep doing that kind of stuff because you just love the little booger so much. And then until they get where either they start biting with those little razor teeth or they're getting heavy, and then we stop. Well, then they're coming back, putting their feet up on us, right? Hey, pick me up. What happened? Don't you? Yeah, come on. I love that. Let's do it again. Feet up, feet up, feet up. So all good things in this, or some of the good things in this little puppy's life, come when their feet are up on you. Feet up, body up, go towards the face, go towards the body. We teach them that stuff. Because we love them, right? We teach them all that. So then they jump on people. And when you let them roughhouse with the dogs, your other dogs, and then they jump on them, right? So whenever you're really happy and you like something, you just jump on it. And then we have a jumping dog. And I don't know how many hundreds of people have brought their dog to me and said, can you teach this dog not to jump on me? And my answer is no. It won't jump on me. But you taught it to jump on you, so I can't undo that neural path that you created. You're going to have to do it yourself, and it's unfair to that poor dog, but you have to do it anyway. So I don't know why I know why you want to pick up a dog, for the same reason I picked up my son and my daughter. I love them to death, and I want them as close as possible. But those are my offspring. Those are children. The dogs, which I love more than anyone listening to this, because I've made dogs my life, I'll get down four on the floor and spend time with them and, you know, make it useful time. But they learn four on the floor. If you want to get attention from her and do some smooching and kissing, you got to have four on the floor. And then when she says we're done, then we're done. We don't go jumping on her for more. So I just want to throw that thing on, you know, you really can live without picking up the puppy. You really can. And you can still love on them all you want. Just go down to them. Teach them that you're the decider. Okay, this is important for the rest of this dog's life and for any formal training you have. Teach them that you're the one that says, yeah, I agree. I think it's love time. And you go to them into their space, their airspace, and you do whatever it is you do. And when you step out of their airspace, it's over. You're the decider, not the puppy. That's a great precedent to set from the very beginning, because all the problems and all the issues and all the things you're going to try to work with down the line need that precedent to be set. So here's a great place to do it, and that you don't have that jumping problem. And I don't know everybody, especially the ladies, and I'm one, right? I understand the nurturing thing. I understand that. But it's a dog, and its mother wouldn't do that. So if you really love it on the terms that its world is, and that's you go down to it and then do all the snatching that you want. So that would completely eliminate the jumping problem. It initiates one from people encouraging the dog upward toward them, and it also is encouraged by letting them jump and maul all over the other dogs. So no, I don't do that. I never do it. And the reason I don't do it is because I know what comes of that a little bit later on. And it's so much easier on that dog if I never let that start. And it's so much easier on me if I never let that start. So does that mean that can never have them together? No. But it means that when they're out there together, you know, control the little guy. And don't let him do that. You know, maybe the first few days are home, but after that, no. I just don't let him do it. And I would never do anything else. If I had a little puppy and I had two options, I would not ever let them do that, because that makes the rest of our time together and all the other animals that are ever going to come into contact with that dog much happier. Because if you let your little puppy maul old Fang there in the living room floor all evening or out in the backyard, then every other dog becomes a toy for them, and that can be dangerous. There are some dogs that will not tolerate that. There are some people like me, I don't want your dog all over my dog. Get it away. So, you know, and I mean emphatically, I don't want your dog on my dog. But if you've taught it, hey, anytime you see another dog, go for it. That's the most fun thing. Then they become that. Nobody in the world wants your dog around when they're like that, I guarantee. And if everybody thinks, oh, they're just playing and burning off energy, that and a whole lot more is going on out there, and none of it is good for you. And that's not the kind of energy that you want to burn off that way with the wild, chaotic, aggressive, no thought, insanity type stuff. So there, that's the jumping and crazy and biting kind of part. The next thing is going to be, how do I say this? One of the things that we all have to learn in this world is to do some things that we don't really want to do, okay? We have to learn to cope with the realities of the life that we're in. And, you know, when you're parenting and you have kids, and some people opt out of doing that and their kids pay the price for that, you know, if they never learn that, you know, sometimes you just got to do the work. Sometimes you've just got to go to the place and visit with the person. Sometimes you've got to go to school even when you just don't like it. And sometimes you have to take a math class that you don't want to take. And sometimes you have to treat another person respectfully even if you don't like them. Okay, so you have to pay taxes, right? You have to, all of this stuff that we have to do, you have to get along with people you don't really want to get along with. And so if we give our kids the tools to learn how to deal with things so that they're not always mad or feeling angry or victimized or whatever it is, but they can cope with stuff, they understand it, they know how to master it, move on past it, and not let it take them down. That's why when you love your kids, you do that stuff, in my opinion. And it is no different with puppies. I think one of the reasons that people spoil their dogs so much has nothing to do with the dog whatsoever. I think it has a great deal to do with their personal psychological state. And here's one thing where I don't have to follow the stupid rules. I can just love this dog, and I have to do so much and endure so much, and I have to put up with all this stuff. And this dog, it just, there's going to be none of that. It's just going to be comfortable, free. And so that's, and then they do their dogs like that. I can't think of a more unkind, unloving thing to do with a dog. Because eventually this dog whether you're going to formally train it or not formally train it, you're going to live with it, presumably, for the next 10, 15 years. And all of the ways of your life and all of the things that you do require that dog to be somewhat of a partnership. Not an equal thing, because it's a dog and you're a people, but a partnership. So when, and I see this all the time, when dogs are on a leash and all that is just a giant holding thing, keeping them from going outside the range of the leash. They have no respect for the leash and no respect for the person there. I don't know why anyone would do that. I've never heard a good reason. This is good because it's just like, I'm not going to make the effort to teach this dog that it has to walk on a leash. And that's what we're looking at. And I was like, good. So now this dog just knows, pull as hard as you can. That's all you do. Just pull hard. If you want this, pull hard. And if it doesn't work, try another direction. Just try to get your own interests and needs met all the time and ignore that human. Not sure why anyone would do that. We have to teach dogs. So, you know, sometimes you have to, I don't care if you're little 16, 14 weeks old. You got to walk on the leash with me. That's all there is to it. You know, it might take several days to get them where they understand that. It then takes several days. Don't skip it. Sometimes they need to go in a crate. Every dog in the world should be crate trained. Even if you never, ever hardly travel with them or do anything with them. And they should be crate trained, because if they're ever ill and have some medical procedure, stitches, something, and they need to be confined, a crate's how you do it. So if you take a little puppy and have a crate, whether they sleep in there at night or spend some time in there, that's how they should travel. Dogs loose in cars, very bad. But if you teach them, sometimes you're in the box and you teach it from the beginning and they don't know any different, right? Then you have a dog that can always be put in a crate when company's coming over, you know, when the house is being painted, when somebody else's dog is there and you can't have, you don't want, I'm not going to let yours maul that one to death. So crate's really good. And in the beginning, they're like, hey, get me out of here. Okay, a couple days of that and you're going to be past it. So now you're going to have a tool that you can keep this dog safe or out of the way when necessary. Why anyone would not do that, I do not know. There are no downsides and only upsides. Teach the dog. Sometimes you go in there and it is not cruel. Sometimes you go in there and you just kind of cool your jets for a while. That's very useful. Teach them to cope with stuff. Sometimes some of these dogs, and I'm getting a raft of them in lately, they just make a ton of noise because they want to be on the other side of the fence or inside or outside or with that dog or not. They express themselves. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't want any humans around me that scream and yell and constantly demand whatever they want. It's like, no, don't be here by me. And I feel the same way about dogs. You know, life is good. You're in a good place. Everything's fine. You need to be there. All right. So be there and be quiet. And it only takes a few times. If at the very early, when they're 8, 9 weeks old, and you teach those guys, sometimes you're over here and you're quiet. And if you make noise, I'm going to roll your crate, or I'm going to put you out in the garage or in the basement so that you learn it doesn't ever get you anything. There's a whole lot of ways you can deal with that kind of stuff. But just don't let the dogs learn to make noise. Just don't. And when you see those little in a weapon box, and those little 6-week-old or say that, they're so cute, right? And there's one in there just screeching all the time. I don't know. Don't grab that one. Because if they're already telling you they're noisemakers, then they're probably, not necessarily, but probably going to be noisemakers later on. So you might skip that. And if that's the one that you get, then teach them that noises never brings them anything good. And quiet does. So there's a lot of behaviors where these dogs, and the whole bottom line of this, is the dogs need to learn to cope with not having their every need and whim and desire met. None of us, no animals in all of existence have that situation. And your puppy shouldn't either. Sometimes they get to do the cool stuff they want, and sometimes they don't. And they shouldn't eat whenever they want. And they shouldn't maul the other dog whenever they want. And they shouldn't jump on you whenever they want. They should learn Very, and in the beginning, you're not. You can't use commands, and you can't use punishment, and you can't use all that stuff. So just teach them this stuff. Four on the floor whenever you're going to love on them. Put them in a crate when it's time for them to be away from things. Just do all that routinely, and it will become their routine. And then you don't have to go in with corrections and trying to figure out how to stop behaviors that you created. Now, can you imagine what that is in a dog brain? Here's this one thing where you've just let them do all kinds of stuff. These are the ones I get in, right? And then all of a sudden you're going, no, you can't do this. And they're going, what happened? This isn't right. No, I get to do whatever. And they're very confused because they got lied to. You know, it's like life is like this. No, it's not. It's this other way. So if you love your dog a lot and you have a dog that's, you know, you may have a dog with some of these issues and you've taught them to that dog, most likely. And all of these things you can address. Above all, teach this dog that sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. Sometimes you just got to go to the math class. Sometimes you just got to go over to Aunt Bessie's and spend time with her. And so just like we've had to learn that, so should these puppies. Okay? That's it's something to think about. If you really do love them and you really do want an awesome life with them, then get them going the right direction. And don't spoil them, because that's probably the most unloving thing that you can do for a kid or an animal, because that's not really the way existence is. So that's the soapbox for that one. I'm going to get to one of the questions that I had. And so this one has to do with last week's, where I kind of revisited the force fetch. And I can hardly wait till the videos get out on that, because it'll be funny for people to see a whole variety of different kind of dogs go through that process. But so here's the question. What am I supposed to do when I do what the instructions say and it doesn't work? Yeah, that's a lot of that. So example, I've had the dog just freeze on opening its mouth when I try to pinch the ear to get the dog to take the bumper. And then that was really difficult. And then, but I also, sometimes the dog will open its mouth, but it won't reach at all. So for those of you that are familiar with force fetch, if you haven't, this isn't going to make a lot of sense. But the dog is sitting there in front of you, and first you have to teach them to hold the bumper. So you literally open their mouth and put it in and teach them to hold. And then after they will do that, and you can heel around and do obedience and all that, and they're still holding the bumper. Now you begin the steps of getting the dog to make the effort to reach for the bumper. So again, this is a big deal to the dog. This is a totally new world, totally new set of demands and actions to take, and also fairly unnatural ones to them, to their way of thinking. So when there's a whole set of instructions, and you've seen there's videos everywhere too, where you see people do this and you try it and the dog doesn't do what they're supposed to. And I know that feeling. I know that feeling. I get it every week. I always get a new dog and it's like, well, I've never seen this before. So when you have to have first clear in your mind, very clear in your mind, what is it? What's the single thing that I'm going for right now? So the first thing was, let me see, look at that. When the dog won't open their mouth. Okay, so my instructions were you have the shotgun shell or whatever you're using with the pinch on the ear right up next to the head, and the discomfort of that pinch, it doesn't break skin, it doesn't do any terrible things, makes them just kind of make a little squeak or something where their mouth just opens slightly, enough that as soon as there's just that little bit of an opening, you can put that bumper in there. And a lot of dogs, well, they get real dramatic and stuff, but usually it's not too hard. You just pinch a few times and you kind of jam it a little bit and you go back, right? And you put it back in to remind them this is what I want, and you go back. So when they just dig in and they're just like, I'm not going to open my mouth and I don't scream and I'm just going to lock jaw on you. So when you're in that kind of a situation, and this is anywhere, on any kind of training, and you're doing everything that you understand you're supposed to do, and the dog isn't responding at all. So, and this goes all through all of dog training, and that happens to everybody all the time. Happens to the best of the best and beginners and everybody in between, when you're just sitting there going, well, I don't even know what to do. So the approach here is to try some different things. First off, When what you're doing is not working, do not keep doing it. Okay? So if you've pinched and then put it, stuffed it back in with using your hand to open it up and then pinched and they still sit there. Okay, now we got to do something drastically different. And I can't tell you always what that is. One of the things in this particular situation I've done that somebody taught me was instead of having my hand in the collar, pinching with the ear, you know, I'll get out of the collar and I'll pinch on the ear and kind of pull it up and kind of jerk it at the same time while I'm pinching. So I broke the thought pattern in this dog and something else. And maybe that's just loosen that jaw enough. I can do that. I might try repositioning somewhere, putting the bumper at another angle where it's easier to stuff in there. I might try something that maybe hurts just a little bit more than just that rounded brass thing. And if I can't get it, like I said, I'll tenderize that ear up just a little bit where it gets a little bruised by this pinching. Come back in the next day, and because it's more tenderized, maybe I can get just a little more of a reaction out of there, and I'll still do the pulling and I'll try some different things. But there isn't like a thing to do. You have to get kind of creative and not hurt the animal, of course, but you've got to break that locked thought. You know, they just go into that just complete stoic mode. You've got to break that thinking and you've got to do something maybe a little unexpected. And if you have to use a little more level of discomfort on that, just something to find something that breaks that. For me, in that particular situation, usually the ear getting a little tender after a day or two is plenty because it's very uncomfortable. And they'll make just a little squawk or something. But you just don't keep doing the same thing. And I think, let me see, the other one was, now, okay, so then apparently they got their dog to open their mouth, but it wouldn't reach at all. That's really common. So now it'll just open his jaw and you have to stuff it in. So now you've got the open jaw, but the dog is making no effort. So again, all right, now you've got to do something different. So like, think a little bit outside the line. So your dog's opening its mouth. So you got hold of the ear, right? Now, if it's opening its mouth, don't be pinching, right? Because they avoid the pinch by opening their mouth. So now let's try a little bit of a pinch and pull the head forward toward just, I mean, like 1 inch, right? Half an inch. Pull the head forward so that they literally make that forward motion to the bumper. And try that a few times and hope that the light bulb comes on. And you can maybe, you would increase the pressure a little bit each time to make them, because the pressure goes away when the bumper's in their mouth. So if you up that a little bit and it stops the minute they reach over and get that, even if you're kind of helping them by pulling the head forward, if that makes sense. You kind of break their thinking and they go, oh, I'll just reach for it because then I don't get my ear pinched. So that's the goal of force fetch, is to have them figure that out. If I just reach for that thing, then I don't get my ear pinched. That's the little breakthrough kind of thing, the little epiphany that you want that dog to have. If I just reach for it. So you've got to be careful not just doing the same thing all the time because they'll think that that's all you're doing. Sometimes do it a little different, make it a little bit different. So they're going, no matter what else, I've got to reach for that every time. That's the goal right there. So when don't keep doing something that's not working. Change it up slightly. Try something different. Pressure level is one thing. Physical movement's another thing. Bumper location is another thing. Maybe get them off wherever you have them clipped up, throw a happy bumper, put them back, try again. Just something to break that locked up thinking. You got to be creative. There is not an answer for that. Next question. This will probably be my last one. This doesn't go on too long. Okay, my dog is good on marks, but breaks in competition. Okay, so this is mark retrieves. So when they train, the dog sits there and doesn't go until scent. Should I set up training to duplicate a test and teach that way? Or should I put her up every time she breaks? I've had so many suggestions. Yeah, this is a common question. One, don't do gimmicky stuff. Now, I'm sure that setting up somebody like, looks like a test, even though you can't really, but it has probably maybe helped somebody, and putting them away has maybe helped somebody. and has not helped a vastly larger number of people with a breaking problem. So when you have a breaking problem in a dog in general, if I knew what everything you'd done, I could make a better answer. So you have a dog that doesn't sit. Okay, that's what I hear when I see this. We have a dog that doesn't sit. I mean, they sit and then they go before they're supposed to. So they're not seated. So you have a doesn't sit until released problem. And apparently in training, the dog knows that you are going to enforce this, or else the dog just is not as exciting. Maybe you don't shoot flyers in training. So when you get a flyer in an event, whoa, that's really a big deal. So then they just can't help themselves and they go. So whatever it is, the bottom line is this dog does not believe enough that when you tell it to sit, it has to sit. That's what you've got right there, is that problem. Your dog doesn't believe it. It's sitting, and then that thought is overridden by the desire to meet its own needs and go out there and get that bird. So what you have to do in stuff like that, I don't think they do the punishment thing. I've heard for years, I just put them up or let them watch, or it's like, I'm not sure that logic train works in most dogs' heads. Oh, I started to take off and they didn't want me to do that, so I'm going to have to go sit in the truck. So next time I go out, I'm not going to break because I don't want to sit in the truck again. Not sure that's how their mind works. Again, you have to isolate what the root cause of your problem is. And that is, this dog is not as convinced about sit as it is convinced it wants to go. That's the problem you have. So what you have to do with a dog like that is have a more convincing sit that overrides the desire to go. That's the problem, and that's what you have to do. So if the dog is perfect in training, let me see if I can make this clearer. If the dog is great in training, it sits there. It probably doesn't sit there. It probably wiggles or scoots a little bit. And people often think wiggling and scooting is fine as long as they don't go. Okay, wiggling and scooting is the beginning of going. So wiggling and scooting for me is the same as going, and I treat it as such, okay? It's a break. So I would enforce sit at a level that dog would take very seriously. So even sometimes the thought, when you're sitting there looking at them and you know they're going, I want to go, that's a great time to enforce sit, even if they're sitting there, if you have the ability to do this. If you don't, then your dog's got a little one-up on you right now. But the conviction about sitting has to be greater than the conviction about going. And the one of the ways you do that, it's easiest by never ever letting it happen, and by installing a very convincing sit before any of this can ever happen. So for those of you with young dogs that you're steadying up on marks and doing all that, okay, don't just go, oh good, they're sitting, everything's good. Know that this sit has to be greater than the desire to go when the heat's on and when you're at an event, right? You need that. So we're going to back engineer our ways and go, all right, I got to really, really enforce sit. I got to really enforce it more maybe than I would, or more than, you know, the dog is currently, they're not breaking, but you're going to enforce sit anyway. So that we are beginning to really condition this, holy moly, I got to sit when I'm running marks. And you do that in training. Now, some dogs, that's a very mild amount of enforcement. And some dogs, it's not a mild amount of enforcement. But you should know your dog pretty well. The bottom line is, you don't just look at the big picture. Look, he only breaks at tests. Again, what it is this dog has a greater conviction of honoring its desires than it does about doing what you told it to do. And you have to change that balance. We want them to love to want to go, but they have to know they can't. They have to sit. They must sit. And when a dog breaks, just to put this out there, you don't say no, because no what? No, don't go get that bird? I bet there's a lot of people listening that have done that. I've seen that a lot. Their dog breaks. No! It's like, no. That's not no. It's sit. Because that's what they're not doing. You don't want to say no because, yes, I do want you to get that bird, but not until I send you. So Make sure that the sit is a really big deal. If your dog has strong obedience and all that, which it should, then you can enforce sit even when it's sitting to drive home the point of, you know, remaining seated is a really big deal here. And scooting and going ahead a little bit and all that. Hell, they're not going. I'm good. I don't care if they can wiggle around. No, that's just a degree of going when they start doing all that. It's much easier on you if you really install a good sit. And when you do that, let me just, if you're standing on the line and your dog, you can just see, oh man, you know, they're just really can't even hardly wait to go get that bird. And you put a little sit pressure on them. They're marking on that particular bird or that set of marks. Their marking may get a little, you know, not as good as it normally is. That's fine. That's fine. That's the consequence of getting their mind off of where that bird just landed and back on their bottom sitting down. So if they're not as good on the mark, that's fine. But you did something important for the future, and that is really working that sit. Okay? I hope that makes sense. So you don't overwhelm and just kill this dog when they're doing the right thing, but you do get into their head and make sure that they understand sitting is a really big deal. If you sacrifice a little marking on some training for a while, that's okay. Because you need that sit when you're in competition. So I don't see setting up something like you're at a hunt test. I've never done that, and I don't see that because that's not your problem. Your problem is that scent is not a very convincing as much as it needs to be for your dog. So there we go. That's 36 minutes. That's good enough for this session. I hope that answered those questions okay. And I want to remind everybody, we got a seminar on finishing off how to finish off a upland dog in the upland field and for the APLA test and stuff like that. That's on March 13th. And I would love to see everybody there and see if we can help people get all the way to the end on this and be real successful. So I will be back soon, and I hope everybody's having a very good winter.